Okay, we're going to start here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Tzadik Daled Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, Beged sheyatzah chutz leplayim. You have a garment that got blood of the chatat on it, so it's stained with blood of chatat, which now would require it visa within the azara. But in the meantime, it left the azara. To nichnas, to bring it back in, umechapso b'makom kadosh. And then you launder it, you clean it in a holy place, meaning in the azara. So the din, as we know from the psukim, is that when kol asher yigab b'psara yigdash, asher yizeh midama al habeged, Asher yizeh aleha techabes b'makom kadosh. So if the chatat splashes onto the beged requires laundering, but that laundering must be done b'makom kadosh, in the place where the chatat is found. The chatat is found in the azara. So the kibbutz has to be done in that same location. Here the beged that was stained by the dama chatat left the azara. So now we say bring it back in and take care of it inside of the azara, because there's no problem with bringing the beged back into the azara. The problem arises when it becomes tamei. Nitmachus leklaim. It became tamei outside of the curtains. The curtains here is a reference to the Mishkan, where the chatzer was delineated by curtains, but in the Mikdash, it means chutz lazara, outside the area where you can eat the kodshei kodoshim. So now it was taken outside, but then the beged became tamei. So now you have a problem, because you can't bring in the tumah into the Mikdash, but you still need to be able to clean off or do the kibbutz of the beged inside the azara for makom kadosh. So here you have a tension between the isur, the restriction of bringing something tamei into the Mikdash, and the necessity to do kibbutz. So the solution here is kor'o, that you rip it, nichnas u'michatzo, and then you bring it in and cleanse it, launder it, v'makom kadosh, inside of the azara. So by ripping it, you take away the shame tum'ah, you remove the tum'ah from the beged, and then after the tum'ah is now gone, you can bring the beged back into the azara in order to launder it, and the Gemara will discuss in more details how exactly that works. Kli cheres sheyatzah chutz leklayim. So again, in these psukim, we also have the din of a kli cheres, which is a kli cheres asher tuvushal bo ishaver ve'im b'kli nechoshet bushala umorak b'shutaf b'mayim. So these dinim also have a similar issue, which is that they must be done inside of the makom kadosh. So the kli cheres must be broken in the makom kadosh, and the kli nechoshet must be bushala umarak b'shutaf b'mayim inside of the azara. So the same issue now arises with regards to them, which is in the case of kli cheres yatzah chutz leklayim, if kli cheres which had a chatat that was cooked inside of it, now it left the azara, nichnas v'shovro b'makom kadosh. You bring it back in and you smash it in the azara. Nitma chutz leklayim, if it became tamei outside of the azara, nukvo. Then you put a hole in it, v'nichnas, and then you bring it back in, v'shovro b'makom kadosh, and break it in the azara b'makom kadosh. So again here, you're trying to remove the tumah from the kli, so you put a hole in it in order to render it ois kli, and then once it's no longer deemed a kli, it doesn't have tumah, and then you can bring it back in and do the breaking inside of the azara. Kli nechoshet sheyatza chutz leklayim. If you have a copper utensil or metallic utensil that went outside of the azara, nichnas, again you bring it back in, umarko b'shotfo, and you do the merikan shtifa b'makom kadosh inside the azara. Nitma, if the kli became tamei chutz leklayim outside of the azara, pochto, then you are pochetet b'nichnas and bring it back in, umarko b'shotfo b'makom kadosh. Then you do the merikan shtifa b'makom kadosh. As far as what the word pochto means, generally pchat means to reduce it or to flatten it out. Over here, Rashi says pochto is to bring a bigger hole in it. It's a bigger hole than the kli cheres. Reduce it by making a larger hole than you would in the kli cheres. So Rashi says kli matechot enu tahor ben nekev kodu. Can't just use a small hole. El ben nekev gadol. You need a significant hole in order to render it ois kli. Ba'al Tosafot and the next Amud are going to discuss this issue more broadly, which we'll discuss then. But they suggest that the pochato means that you turn it inside out. That you turn whatever was the outside to be the inside now, and vice versa, the inside is now the outside. So you invert the kli in order to be mitaheret, which presents its own issues, which we'll discuss in a minute. Or, again, the traditional meaning of the word pochato, but nobody really offers as an explanation over here, like we saw in Avodah Zarah, means to flatten it out, to crush it down. So you have to do something that removes, again, the shame kli from it, so it's no longer tamei. And after that, you bring it into the kodesh, into the azarah, and to the Mirkan Shtifa that is incumbent upon you. So Matkif La Ravina. Ravina now asks, Kor'o, how could it be that the Mishnah suggests that if it's a beged tamei that you rip it in order to get rid of the tumah? So the idea being that once you've ripped it, it's no longer a beged, because that's why the tumah goes away. The tumah is only relevant to a beged. Once you remove the shame beged from it, it's no longer tamei because it's not a beged anymore. But if you're successful at doing that, then how can you, when you take it back in, do kibbutz on the beged when the pasuk says specifically, "Kol asher yigah b'vsara yikdash, asher yizeh midama al habeged, asher yizeh aleha tichabes b'makom kadosh." So here we're speaking about al habeged, that it's something that soiled the beged, and therefore when it gets taken in to be cleansed or laundered, it needs to be considered a beged. Now truthfully, from the pashtuta pasuk, it's not as easy to see that, because it sounds here that the stain has to happen, or that the blood has to come on it when it is a beged. And then it has to be laundered, and that might be independent of whether it's called a beged anymore. And that might be the solution to the problem. The Gemara doesn't say that, so obviously the Gemara believes that the word beged still has relevance to the latter part of the pasuk, when it says, "Asher yizeh midama ala beged, asher yizeh aleha techabes b'makom kadosh." So that kibbutz seems to be referencing back to the beged, that the beged that we spoke about before, techabes, you will launder b'makom kadosh. There's an assumed subject to the latter half of the pasuk that's also referencing to the beged. And so now you're really in a catch-22, which is, in one sense, you're trying to get rid of the tuma. In order to get rid of the tuma, you have to remove the shame of whatever the item is in order to remove the tuma. Once you do that, it's no longer the original item. It's no longer the original item. Then you can't perform whatever obligations you have with regards to that item. So that's really the question of Ravina. He says, "Koro beged amar rachmana, v'la begedu." The Torah says that you have to cleanse the beged, and it's no longer a beged. Gemara's answer is, "The mishayer be'kadei ma'poret." It leaves amount enough to be a ma'poret, which is a sadin, which can either be like a small apron, a turban, a handkerchief of sorts, but it's a small strip that he leaves there. So you rip the beged rove of the way. So rubo kukulo, it's as if you ripped the whole beged. But at the tail end of that, you leave a strip that is wide enough that it can function as a beged afterwards. And so you leave that over. So the Gemara says, "Ini, does that really help you then?" V'amar Rav Huna, lo shanu lo she'er ba kedei ma'poret. It's only true if you don't leave over that strip that it's considered to be tahor. Aval, she'er ba kedei ma'poret chibur havi. But if you leave over that strip, it still has a shame beged. If it has a shame beged, then you haven't gotten rid of the tuma. And then it's considered to be mechubar to the remainder of the beged that's torn, and there's a kriya. And that makes the beged retain the shame beged, and now it's tameh. So if it's tameh, you haven't solved anything by ripping it there, because you can't take it into the azara if it's still tameh. And if you go far enough to rip it where it's no longer tameh, it's not a beged anymore, and then you won't have a requirement of kibbutz if you remove the obligation to do kibbutz on this beged. My answer is midrabananu. That statement of Rav Huna is a rabbinic injunction. It's not the din midoraita. Midoraita, if you tear the beged through the rove of the beged, it's considered to be ois beged. It's no longer a beged, and it's tahor, because the tuma now goes because you lost the shame beged from it. But at the end, the tail end there, you have a maporet, or something that is ra'ur liot maporet. And if that's the case, then you have something that is still got a shame beged to it. And that's what allows you to do the kvisa on it. So, in one sense, it loses its shame beged for tuma. In the other sense, it maintains its shame beged for the requirement or the obligation to do kibbutz. You do that by ripping it the robe of the way, which deems the beged to be ois beged for tuma. You leave a sufficient strip at the end that it still has a shame beged, that strip at the end. We just have Rav Huna suggest if you leave a strip like that, it's a chibur, and the whole item remains tameh. That's rabbinic. That's only midrabanan. And in the Mikdash, in this situation, they waive the didrabanan. The didrabanan is gzeira atu shelo yikara roba, that he will not tear the robe of the beged. Our fear is that if we allow him to tear the robe of the beged and leave over something that's still functional, then the next time he's not going to rip the robe of the beged. He's only going to rip halfway, or he's going to rip less than halfway, and then you won't have a robe, and then it really won't be tahor. So in order to prevent people from making decisions about how much they leave over, they give a black and white din, which is you got to rip it till the end. And once you rip it to the end, we know it's tahor because there's no beged left here. But in our instance, where there's an offsetting or mitigating factor, which is we want it to be a beged for kvisat adam achatat, over there we waive the injunction midrabanan, and we allow you to leave that ma'poret at the end in order that it still has a shame beged. So Rashi over here explains the way that this works is that the rips tear the beged to a point where you leave over sections that are at least 3x3 etzba'ot. So Rashi says that the ripping of the beged takes away the shame tuma, but the fact that there's still pieces that are shalosh and shalosh etzba'ot gives it a shame beged for the din of kibbutz. And Rashi, in explaining why it is a shame beged for the kibbutz and not a shame beged for tuma, is because the Beged no longer does its original purpose. It no longer can function the way that it functioned before, and therefore it's considered not to be a Beged for Tumah, but it's still considered to be a Beged for Kibbutz. Right now, Kli Cheres Siyatza, the Mishnah had, in all three of the dinim that we know from these psukim, the Mishnah asked the same question, came up with a solution. So we had Beged, and the solution there was to rip it, to get rid of the Tumah. But the Kli Cheres, it was to have it be broken in some way, have a hole in it, so that it loses its shame as a Kli Cheres, but not broken to the point where it wasn't a Kli anymore. So that's what the Gemara says here. Kli Cheres Yatza, Kli Amar Rachmana, Velo Kli Hu. If you take away the shame Kli so that it's now Tahor, then it's no longer a Kli. And if it's no longer a Kli, the Torah says, Ukli Cheres Asher Tibushal Bo Yishaver. It has to be a Kli Cheres in order for you to break it. My answer is Shinikev Vishorish Katan. It has a hole the size of a small root. So the Bali Tosafot, just in general, ask about this requirement because Shorish Katan is not a threshold that we find in Masechet Kelim with regards to Tumah. Over there we have, the smallest is B'machnis Mashke, is the ability for water or liquids to enter into the Kli. That renders it Ois Kli for liquids, or a Kli Cheres that's working with liquids. And for solids, it has to be motzi zayit. It has to be enough that an olive would slip out of it. The hole has to be that big. So those are the two sizes that we find. We don't refine shorish katan. The only time we find shorish katan is with regards to uksim, with regards to hechsher zraim. And so the Balei Tosafot suggests over here that possibly the shorish katan is a balance between a kli that is used both for liquids and solids. When you have a kli that's used for liquids and solids, then that overlap makes it that you have a different standard. The problem with that is that the Mishnayot and Kelim say when you have a Kli that is multifunctional, you go to Chumrah. So if it can use for solids and liquids, then you need the bigger hole, the Kedei Kazayit, in order to take away the shame Kli from it, because it functions in solids. So here the Balei Tosafot suggests that it's not just that it's liquids and solids, it's liquids and solids together, because the Chatat, along with the gravy, is put in there, and then the meat could go down to the point where it covers over the hole, and then the gravy wouldn't seep out anymore. So it needs something a little bigger than machnis mashke, but doesn't need to be as large as a zayit. And therefore they give this in between shiur of motzi kishoresh katan, the small root that comes out of it. Although Rashi just simply explains, and that's what Tosfot bothers Tosfot, is that shoresh katan, ikal mandamar, seu shiur nikivatoli taher. That's the size that you need in order to make it tahor. And in this case, what you've done is you've given it a hole that's large enough that it now is rendered ois kli for what was used before, but it's still functional in some other way afterwards. So now again, you have the same question with regards to kli nechoshet, and then we'll come back and discuss this more along the lines of what the Balei Tosafot are questioning. It says kli nechoshet pochato, va'alav klihu. Once again, if you render it not a kli, then why do you need to do the merikan shtifa if it's not a kli anymore? Because there's a requirement of kli nechoshet. So Gemara answers, it's a case, the ratzif miratzif. It's a case, Rashi says, over here, where he pounds it down, he flattens it out. Or in essence, he hits the metal or squeezes the metal together to the point where it covers up the hole or it shuts the hole. So the hole came in and made it tahor. And then when you reseal the hole, that makes it a kli again. And that resealing allows you with the kli to do the merikam and the shtifa after the fact. So the Balei Tosafot ask a question on this. And that question then leads them to explain the Gemara slightly differently. It is a continuation, basically, of the question of Ravina. Ravina posed a fundamental question, which is, if you're getting rid of the Tumah by removing the Shame Kli, the Shame Beged, from this item, then you've also removed the Shame Beged and Shame Kli for what has to be done with regards to the Dama Chatat, or regards to the Chatat that was cooked in these items. So how do you balance between these two? So in the end, the Gemara gives answers, but the answers that the Balei Tosafot will point out also run you into a problem, which is that in one sense, if you do something that renders the kli useless, and then you have something that you can use it for in the future, then that's what we call a kli chadash. That's a new kli. If it's a new kli, then you're not doing what you were supposed to do in terms of the kibbutz beged for the dama chatat, or the merika shtifa, or the shvira, the kli cheres. All of those items require the original kli. And now if you've done something that's significant enough that it's no longer called the original kli, then how are you accomplishing what you need to accomplish? And that's what the Balei Tosafot basically asks on Rashi's explanation here. If you beat the kli back in to the point where now it's sealed the hole, you have now a new kli here. The new kli then doesn't require Mikan Shtifa anymore. So how does that solve your problem? So in the end, the Baal Tosafot give an alternate explanation, which is that instead of saying that Retzif Mirtzif is to pound it down and to close the hole up, that's what he explained that the Pochato in the Mishnah was to invert it. It's to change the clay from its inside to its outside, and in that way, it remains the same clay, quote-unquote. Although Achronim point out that the Baal Tosafot, in a sense, don't really solve the problem, because when you invert the clay, you really did create a clay chadash in this case. And then how is it that you're accomplishing what you need to accomplish with regards to the chatat? But that's the basic idea of the Baal Tosafot. So Rashi over here explains the way that this works is that the rips tear the beged to a point where you leave over sections that are at least 3x3 etzba'ot. So Rashi says that the ripping of the beged takes away the shame tumah. But the fact that there's still pieces that are shalosh or shalosh etzbaot gives it a shame beged for the din of kibbutz. And Rashi, in explaining why it is a shame beged for the kibbutz and not a shame beged for tumah, is because the beged no longer does its original purpose. It no longer can function the way that it functioned before, and therefore it's deemed to be, considered not to be a beged for tumah, but it's still considered to be a beged for a kibbutz. The Baal Tosafot are unwilling to accept that distinction. Just because it doesn't do its original purpose doesn't mean that it loses its shame tumah. And therefore the Baal Tosafot believe that the rips are thin enough that there aren't sections of shalosh by shalosh etzbaot left, and then therefore it deems it not to be a beged, not for tumah, and then seemingly not for kibbutz as well. So then how does Tosafot deal with the issue of the fact that it needs to be a beged for kibbutz? So now Tosafot explains that the distinction that's being made here about the new kli, or the kli chadash, is something that we noted 2 daf ago on Tzadik Gimel with regards to the machloket about ra'ui the kabel tumah versus mikabel tumah. And over there, the shita of Rabbi Yehuda was that anything that is ra'ui the kabel tumah already has a status of quote-unquote beged or kli, and if the dam chatat gets on it, then it's going to be impactful. Now over there, the Rashi and the Baal Tosafot believed that you still needed to have a mechuser machshova, but not a mechuser masa, which means as long as there was a mechuser machshova, Rabbi Yehuda was willing to say that it's ra'ui lekabel tumah. And so the Baal Tosafot make a similar suggestion over here. They don't reference that, but they're making a similar suggestion over here with regards to the kli chadash. And that is that as long as now the kli can be repurposed through a machshova, but you have yet to do it, that's enough to take away the shame tumah from it, but it's not enough to remove the shame kli or shame beget for it for the din of the chatat. Nir lefaresh, kevin shemoyil lo yichud lo oto beget shishir bo kadei maporet, since you have the capacity to change this beget from what it was before to now use it as a sudar, because you left off sufficient amount that wasn't ripped that could be done this way. Shalohiv dila kraim al pnei kulo. You didn't rip the rips all the way through to the other side. Oto kli shinikev bishoresh hakatan. And also the same thing with the kli cheres that has a hole of a shoresh katan. Shemayam miachadol zeitim or the rimonim. Had he afterwards repurposed it to use it for olives or pomegranates which are bigger, hayim mekabel tuma mikano laba. At that point, it will be mekabel tumah prospectively. So chashivu kli ubeged liimdian dam chatat. That's enough to render it a kli or a beged for dam chatat. Kevin deinu mechuser maseh. Since it's not missing in action, eli yichud ba'alma, a designation, and that's it. So what the Baal Tosafot in the end trying to balance this say is, the beged, when you rip it, is always beged. And that's why the tumah goes away. And in some senses, that should also render the whole issue with the chatat or dam chatat moot, because it's not a beged anymore. But what the Tosafot says is that the fact that you could repurpose this beged just through a machshava is enough to render it a beged for the din of the chatat. And so for the din of the chatat, that's enough to classify it as a beged. But for the din of tumah, since you've already removed the original purpose of this beged, and it's no longer going to function in that way, then it's no longer a beged for the tum'ah that happened to the old beged. And when you repurpose it, it will be a beged chadash. But you have yet to repurpose it. So here the balance is putting it in a state where it's already lost the shame of the original beged, so it gets rid of the tum'ah. It's not yet a beged chadash, so it still retains the shame of the original beged, but it's close enough to being a beged chadash that it has a shame beged for the din of the chatat. And the Tosafot says the same thing with regards to the kli cheres as well, that you're in that in-between stage, a stage where you render it useless in terms of its original purpose. You have yet to repurpose it, so it's not a kli chadash, but you can, in a very simple way, be miyached in your mind. Think about it. That's enough to repurpose it, and therefore it gets a shame kli based on that. That's the way the Baalei HaTosafot try to balance this issue. Then the Baalei HaTosafot asked a separate question earlier on, which is a question within the world of Tumah, something as we've passed in our travels through Shas so far, that when you have something that's Tameh, and then it gets ripped, the Gemara says that it has what's called Tumat Maga. And that's because it touched itself. And since it touched itself, whatever Tumah was on there now touched itself and gives it Tumat Maga of that item. And so the Baalei HaTosafot say, why does ripping a beged in these situations help you out if it retains the Tumat Maga? So since it's in this case, it got Tumat Amet. And then you rip the beged. So now you have a beged that has Maga Amet, which is now it's a Rishon, the Tumah, instead of being an Abba Tumah. So why does that help you in terms of the beged? Because it still retains its Tumah. So the Baalei HaTosafot, to solve this problem, say, V'yesh lomar, the talit u'beged, the shmaitin shiny. Shehem kli, v'shem kli aleihem. That the kelim in our situation here are all full-fledged kelim before the problem arises. And therefore, when you do something to take away the shame kli, it not only takes away the tumah from the standpoint of the original tumah is gone, but you still have tumat magah, it's successful removing the tumah completely, because you've changed the designation of this kli so significantly. You've taken it from being a kli to being not functional in that way. That's enough not only to get rid of the tumah, but get rid of the tumat magah as well, and it's completely tahor. But the cases where the Gemara says there's tumat magah left over, even after you rip the item, that's in a case of a behema makshet. Mairi b'chatikat beged alma. It's talking about, well, you're talking about a rag already. Something that's already not a kli, it's already a portion of cloth. V'ain shem kli alav. Doesn't have a shem kli on it. It has ability to be used for things, and therefore it still has a shame, quote unquote, of tumah or shame beged on it. But nevertheless, it is not a kli. And therefore, when you rip it, you really haven't changed it so dramatically to the point where it's going to become completely tor. And when you rip the rag, now you have two rags. So again, okay, as far as the tumah was on it, you've now rendered it that it's no longer tamei, the tumah. But for tumat maga, it still will retain it. And that way, the Baalei HaTosafot differentiate between a case where ripping is a solution to the problem, makes it completely tahor, versus sometimes where ripping takes away the original level of tumah, but leaves you with a tumat maga of the original tumah, because you didn't change it from a kli to a not a kli, you just changed it from something bigger to something smaller. And so now the Gemara says, Amar Eish Lakish, Mi'il Shinitma, when a Mi'il becomes Tameh, that's the Mi'il of the Kohen Gadol, which is Kli'il Techelet, if it becomes Tameh, and it has a splash of Dam Chatat on it, Machniso Bepachot Mishalosh Al Shalosh, you bring it in with less than 3 by 3, Shalosh by Shalosh would be Shlosh Etzba'ot by Shlosh Etzba'ot. As you can see, the Bach changes the Girsa over here, that the Girsa should be Shlosha Al Shlosha, which would be 3 by 3 tfachim and not shalosh v'shalosh etzbaot. That might deal with some of the issues that the Baalei HaTosafot raised over here. Umechabso. And then you launder it. Yishub shenemar, what's the issue over here? Why is this different than any other situation we dealt with before? Because shenemar lo yikareya. By the mi'il, the Torah says you're not allowed to rip the mi'il. Truth is, that's not what the Torah says. The Torah says lo yikareya with regards to the neck or the collar of the mi'il. It says you can't make the collar of the me'il like a standard collar is made, where if you're making a cloak of sorts like the me'il is, you'd make the whole cloth, and then you cut out the area where one would put their neck or insert their head into it. So that's the typical way you would do it. The Torah says, lo yikareya, you can't do that, you can't tear it out. It has to be woven in such a way that that collar exists without having to rip it out. It's made that way. So that's where the pasuk is said. But in the Gemara, in other locations, Amoraim, I think it's Reish Lakish, also over there, says that the restriction of Lo Yikareya, it has broader application, and it doesn't just apply to the Me'il, it applies to the Big Day Kuna Bichlau, and that's how the Rambam paskins the Halacha, that the Isser of Lo Yikareya applies to all of the Big Day Kuna, not just to the Me'il. Because the suggestion of the Mishnah is when the Beged becomes Tamei outside of the Azara, you rip it, so that gets rid of the Tumah, and then you bring it in to deal with the kibbutz. Arir, you can't do that because there's a restriction against ripping the beged of the Kohen Gadol of the Me'il, and so you can't rip it. So how do you solve the problem? So Reish Lakish's suggestion is that you bring it in portions of the beged that are smaller than the area that would render it a item that is tameh. So we know that there are different thresholds with regards to the begadim. There's one threshold of shalosh or shalosh, which is three etzbot by three etzbot. And there's also a minimum threshold of a beged of three tefachim by three tefachim. The Mishnayot and Kelim deal with both of these measurements as to when they're relevant. But generally, for a starting beged, in order to have a shame beged, it needs to be at least three by three tefachim. Sheyarei, the leftovers of a beged, even as small as three by three etzbot, can maintain their shame beged, because they can be used for a patch afterwards. Since they can be used for a patch, therefore they retain a shame beged, and they can still be mekabel tuma. So over here, what you're trying to do is bring in the me'il in such a way where it doesn't have a full shame beged on it when you bring it into the azara. And so by doing so, you can do the kibus on that area without bringing the whole me'il in. And since the robe of the me'il is outside, it won't be a problem. The Baal Tosafot say over here, even though we had a machloket earlier in the Masechta that bia mixat shmei bia or lo shmei bia, when something enters the Azara partially, is that considered to be as if they entered completely? Over here, the Gemara doesn't seem to address that at all. And so the Baal Tosafot over here say, afilu leman damar bereish kol psulim bia mixat shma bia, even according to one who says that a partial entry is considered to be like a full entry, shiny beget hoyo biyachol lechotcho lo chashiv kilu nichnas kulo. Since a beget can be broken into component parts, therefore, it's not considered to be bia mixat. Bia mixat only applies to an object that's a whole object. It is an inseparable object, like a human being. A human being is a whole object that you can't separate the component parts. So if a portion of the human being goes in, bia mixat shmei bia, that's the dea. But in regards to a piece of clothing which can be separated into component parts, over there, there's no din of bia mixat shmei bia. Although the achronim over here are puzzled by the question of the Baal Tosafot, because bia mixat shmei bia is only a din with regards to human beings. It's not a din with regards to objects. And therefore, the question doesn't even get off the ground, because bia mixat is all a din by Adam, and it's not a din by Kelim or Beged. And so you don't even have to ask the question to answer the question. Truth is that Baal Tosafot might be explaining why there's such a difference, because you still might have to explain why that's the case. So maybe the Baal Tosafot are giving the reason for why that is, that there's such a distinction between a beged and a human being, but they suggest that the Tosafot's question seems to be moot from the outset, because there's no such concept as bia mixat. You're speaking about a beged. Meiti v'vada bavo, havin v'arakim. When you have items that are very thick or very soft, ein b'hem mishum shalosh shalosh. There's no concept of three by three. So, as Rashi notes over here, the lav levisha chazu. Those items cannot be worn. These very thick items, or these very soft items, they can't be worn at all. The lav letakein behen chaluk. And they can't be used to patch something else. Ella, the yesheva lav. The only purpose you have for these items is to sit on it. Mitzarich shlosha al shlosha. And you need a minimum of 3 by 3 for that. The meal itself is avhu. It's very thick. Because it's 12 ply, as the Gemara says in Yoma. Therefore, it's something that's very thick. If it's very thick, then this whole din of shalosh, shalosh, shalosh does not apply to the me'il. So if that's the case, then there's no chashivut to the beged. Why do you even have a question here? You can enter in the 3 by 3. You can put in even up to 3 by 3 tefachim, and it won't be a problem because the fact that the me'il doesn't have a din of shalosh, shalosh. So you can bring even more of the me'il. Why are you limited to shalosh, shalosh? The first answer is, agava bien chashive. The truth is that when something is thick or very soft, the way Rashi terms soft over here is feltera, it's probably felt, which is in aruga, something that's not woven, but is pressed like felt. So those items, if they are separated away from a major piece of a beged, then they no longer have a din of tuma, because in an independent state, they're not significant. But when they're attached to a larger item, they retain their significance, even at that smaller amount. And so that's what the Gemara's answer is. Shalosh shalosh is the guide over here, because even though shalosh shalosh by itself would not be sufficient to make it into something of significance, when it's attached to the whole meal, it is still of significance. Now the Tosfot over here mentioned with regards to shalosh shalosh versus shlosha shlosha, the Baal Tosfot note that Rashi says that shalosh shalosh and shlosha shlosha is a very subjective issue. With regards to residual pieces of clothing, when is it considered to be significant or not significant? So Rashi says, and the Mishnayot say, that there's a difference between wealthy people and poor people. For poor people, shalosh ha-shalosh etzvot is significant because they'll patch up anything, they'll use any small rag or piece of cloth, they'll keep it because they want to patch things up. For an ashir, it only if it's shalosha shalosha is it considered to be significant because they're not going to keep around these small pieces of cloth or small pieces of rag. So Rashi says that's a distinction between ashir and an ani. And Tosafot says, how can Rashi's distinction be correct? Our Gemara is a proof against that. So here we're speaking about a beged of the Kohen Gadol, and ein aniyut b'makom ashirut, we know that we're speaking about begadim of royalty, begadim of significance over here. So how could you claim that shalosh or shalosh is significant in that context? Because that's only true by ani for Rashi. So the Rabbeinu Tam explains that, Romer Rabbeinu Tam, dinyan tumata meit v'sheretz, ein chiluk ben aniyim le'ashirim. When it comes to tumata meit, tumata sheretz, this concept of a distinction or subjective distinction between ani and ashir doesn't exist. Ela li'inyan midras ivy. It's only with tumat midras, which is tumata comes from sitting on it, laying on it, which is usually associated with the zav as being the paradigmatic type of tumat midras. Hatam the baish lalosha ashlosha ashirim. That is, you need 3x3 for ashirim. Behind utaimed the midras biyichu talia milta. Bein derech ashir yached the midras pachot mishlosha shlosha. Va'afilu yached. And if he does it b'teila dato, he says it's uniquely associated with tumat midras, which is about sitting on it, and therefore you need something of more significance for the ashir to use it to sit on, and that means the shlosha shlosha. For the ani, you'll keep it for a patch, you'll keep it for other things. And therefore, it's significant for shalosh shalosh. So the Rabbeinu Tam solves the problem by saying that that distinction between ashir and ani is only relevant by tumat midras. By other tumot, there's no such distinction. And therefore, our Gemara over here is speaking about those other tumot. And that's why shalosh shalosh is considered to be the threshold or the significant threshold in this case. Ba'abayi shivat simamanim. Don't you need the 7 items to cleanse it? The Gemara here is referencing to a Mishnah in Nida. The Mishnah in Nida says when you want to cleanse the Dam Nida from a beged and take out the ketem, you have to use these 7 items in order to cleanse it. And the Mishnah over there lists the items as rope tafal, which the Gemara is going to mention in a second, which is saliva from an individual who hasn't eaten on that day, mei grisim, mei raglayim, urine, which is going to be important to the Gemara upcoming, neter, borit, kamonia, vashleg. All types of detergents that are used. The Mishnah says you have to use these 7 detergents in order to remove it. Now, if it's just a white baguette, then all you need is, Rashi calls it over here, it's a phone, you need soap in order to take it off. That single detergent will take it off. That's true when you're dealing with a white baguette. But when you're dealing with a colored baguette, you can't use the sabon because the sabon is going to take away or ruin the color of the baguette. So you want the color of the baguette to be maintained even though you're taking out the stain. And the only way to do that is the Sheva Simamananim. That partly has to do also with the din in Menachot, the test for knowing whether something is Techelet or Kaleilan, which is the difference between basically indigo and the Techelet, which comes from the sea creature. The difference is how it takes, the coloring or the dye takes on the beged. By Techelet, it takes so strongly that when you launder it and put these detergents on it, it doesn't fade. On the other hand, the binding or the bonding of the kalailan, of the indigo from the plant, doesn't have that effect, and when you wash it with the smananim, it washes the color down. So here we're speaking about a meal that has tchelet in it. So you can use the smananim to clear it out, it will take the stain out without taking the color out. So that's the nature of the question here, which is, that dam chat, that over here, don't you need the 7 smananim? Dam Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avua, dam chatat, umarot negayim. When it comes to the dam of a chatat, or the marot negaim, where you have a requirement to cleanse or launder the nega from the beged, tzuchim shivas mananim. You need the 7 mananim in order to do this. V'tanya, and we have a braita which you're familiar with because we say it every day. Ela she'ein makdisim meraglayim lemikdash. The reason that the meraglayim, the urine, would have been a great thing to use for the tziporin, but the reason we don't use it is because ein makdisim meraglayim lemikdash. You can't take in urine to the mikdash. So now you're in a bind. You need the Sheva Smananim in order to launder the beged from the dam achatat that's on it, but you can't bring the meiraglayim, which is one of the 7 ingredients in this detergent. It can't be brought into the mikdash. Over here, Rashi says, amatniten kaparich. Rashi says the question of the Gemara is on the Mishnah. It's not on Reish Lakish. It's not on Amar of Nachman, Amar of Baravua. It's on the Mishnah itself. The Mishnah itself, like you suggested, says that you have to cleanse the Beged inside the Azara. And how are you going to do such a thing of cleansing the Beged inside the Azara? The assumption being that when the Mishnah said that you were speaking about a Beged, it wasn't speaking about all the big dekuna. It was only speaking about the Me'il in particular, it sounds like. And therefore, the question of the Gemara is even on the Mishnah. The Bali Tosafot point out that that's not necessarily true, that you have to say that this is a question on the Mishnah. The question is more directed at Reish Lakish. And he says, even though the Gemara asked on Reish Lakish, they could have just as equally asked it on Rav Nachman and Rav Avua. Because Rav Nachman and Rav Avua tell us that you require the Shiva Smananim. Without them, there would be no such requirement. Without that requirement, you don't have a question. So the question could be on Rav Nachman. The question could be on Reish Lakish, who says we're speaking about the Me'il, which is made out of Tehillot, which is colored Beged. On the other hand, the Mishnah could have answered that it's speaking about the Big Day Kohen Hedjot, instead of the Big Day Kohen Gadol. And therefore the Mishnah is not necessarily a stira to the fact that you have to cleanse with the Shiva Smamanim. And so what the Bali Tosafot do is say that the Mishnah is speaking about Big Day Kohen Hedjot, and with Reish Lakish, it's about a Beged Tehillot, which is the Me'il. Rashi, on the other hand, says that this is equally a question on the Mishnah, which means that they are explaining that the Mishnah is speaking about the Me'il. Now, if you do that, you could answer your question from before is, why is this only a question on the Me'il? Or how does the Mishnah make the sense suggestion to be quote O, to rip it? It might be because the Mishnah is not speaking about the Me'il, it's speaking about the other Big Day Kuhuna. So now, according to the Bali Tosafot, that's a good solution. According to Rashi, that's a poor solution. But even according to the Bali Tosafot, you have to ask the question, like the Rambam, which is, okay, even if you make it the other Big Day Kuhuna, don't you have a problem that this restriction of ripping Big Day Kuhuna applies more broadly than simply to the Me'il? So over there, you have, like the Mishnah of the Melech, and others that try to answer on behalf of the Rambam to suggest that there is a distinction between what type of ripping. If you look in the Rambam says that restriction against kriya for other big day kuna is only a kriya of hashkata, is a kriya that's destructive in nature. Whereas for the me'il, the lo yikareya is period. You cannot rip it. And that way the Mishnah Melech tries to answer this question and say the me'il in particular is problematic. You're not allowed to rip it at all. On the other hand, the other big day kuna, you have a solution to the problem, which is the fact that the other big day kuna, the restriction is only a kriya of hashkata, a kriya that's destructive. But over here, you're not doing it to be destructive. You're doing it in order to facilitate the ability to do something. So it's actually a constructive kriya. That's the solution of the Mishnah Lamelech. But the Minchat Chinuch thinks that answer of the Mishnah Lamelech is not sufficient because we know that Lo Yikareya, as we noted before, is only written by the collar of the Me'il. And therefore, that distinction between a ripping of Ashchata versus ripping period is really between all Big Day Kuhuna, the Me'il, and on the other side is just the collar of the Me'il, which has that restriction against any type of ripping. But there's no such distinction between the core of the Me'il and all the other Big Day Kuhuna. Then you have to answer that the Mishnah is speaking about Bigadim that are not Big Day Kuhuna, and not just that it's speaking about Big Day Kuhuna Yod versus Me'il, but rather it's talking about a Big Day Chulin versus Big Day Kuhuna. So now the Gemara continues and says, okay, maybe we'll solve the problem over here. So what you'll do is you'll mix in the urine with the other detergents, and then it won't be visible or noticeable or delineated by itself, and it won't be a problem to bring it into the Azara. And then you'll use all the detergents like that. So the Gemara, and then you use all the detergents at once and wash it in one shot. The problem is that the Mishnah Nida says, if you launder it, not in this order, or you launder it with all seven of the detergents at once, it's not efficacious. It's not successful at cleansing. So the only way it works is if you do it exactly in the order that they're listed in the Mishnah, and you have to do each one individually. So God says, okay, what we'll do is, so what you do is you'll include the urine together with one of the other smananim, and that'll solve the problem. It says, v'ha'atzarich, the kaskes, shalosh pe'amim, v'chol echad ve'echad t'nan. Doesn't the Mishnah tell us that you have to rub them together? Each time you put on the detergent, you have to rub it three times And then before you move on to the next detergent. So if you are now mixing the Mei Raglayim together with another one of the ones that's adjacent to it, so that it's in order, that doesn't help you. Because each one that's put in individually also has to put in a way where you actually do some action to the Beged before you move on to the next one. So it being subsumed within another one of these items is not going to solve your problem. It's Ella Demiblahu Baruch Tafal. No, it's a case where he mixes it with the saliva from an individual has yet to eat that day. Damar Shlokish, Rok Tafal Tzvich Sheim Kol Echad Vechad. Because Rok Shlokish qualifies the Mishnah there and says you mix Rok Tafal with each one of the ingredients there. It's the first of the detergents that's mentioned. If you mix it with the other items that are there, that's the way to do it. So in that case, the Mei Raglayim would be diluted by the fact that there's Rok Tafal, and then you wouldn't bump into the problem of bringing Mei Raglayim into the Azara, as opposed to the case by the Toret, where you're going to bring in it alone to process the Tziporen. So over there, that would be restricted, and that's why we don't allow you to do it there. My next Mishnah, Echad Shebishel Bo, Ve'echad She'ira L'Tocha Roteach. It doesn't matter whether you cooked in it, or whether you poured boiling hot water into it. Echad Kodshei HaKodoshim, Ve'echad Kodshim Kalim, whether it's Kodshei Kodoshim, Kodshim Kalim, any of these items, Tunim Mirika Ushtifa. It requires Mirika and Shtifa. The Pashtuta Mishnah, and the way Rashi explains the Mishnah is we're speaking about a Kli Nechoshet here, and this whole din is with regards to Kli Nechoshet. On the other hand, in the Bright and the Gemara, it seems a little differently. The Mishnah is not only speaking about the Mirika and Shtifa, the Kli Nechoshet, but speaking about Shvirat Kli Cheres, the breaking of the Kli Cheres. And the Rambam also says, like we said back on Sadi Gimel, that the din of Shvirat Kli Cheres only applies to a Chatat, not to other Korbanot. But that's going to become difficult as the Gemara continues over here, because we're going to see in the Braita that there are other items of Kodshei Kodashim that are cooked in the oven, and the Gemara assumes that there would be a requirement of Shvirat Kli Cheres. But the Rambam does believe that anything besides a Chatat requires Mirika and Shtifa in a Kli Cheres, and not Shvira, which is difficult from both angles. Why is it only unique to Kli Cheres by Chatat that requires Shvira? And why is it that Mirika and Shtifa works by Kli Cheres if it doesn't work in general in terms of Hagalah and the kashering of Kli Cheres? We already discussed this earlier in the previous Mishnayot on Sadi Gimel, that really raises a serious issue because the Kli Cheres is a problem independent of it being a Chatat. It has a problem of Beliah and that turning into Isur. So don't you have to break the Kli Cheres irrespective of whether there's Chatat in there? So we spoke about the answers on Zadi Gimel. It's either the fact that the requirement for Shvira is only by when it absorbs the Chatat or the Kodshei Kodashim or whatever you believe is problematic over here, then there's a demand for Shvira. On the other hand, if you don't plan on using the Kli, then you don't have to break it because there's no problem of, because you're not going to use it. Or even if you use it with just cold items, maybe there's no problem of Plita. And therefore, you could keep it around in those situations. You wouldn't have a requirement to be shover it. And others still suggest that the difference here is that here the Kli Cheres is absorbing the item when it's heter. It's only later on that it becomes Isur by Notar. And since it was Boleya heter, there's no requirement of being shover the Kli Cheres over here. And in that way, they help to understand why the Rambam thinks that maybe Kli Cheres is relevant in this Mishnah as well. So in this case, even if you cooked in it or you poured boiling hot water into it, there is a requirement of Mirika and Shtifa. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kodshim Kalim, ain't to any Mirika and Shtifa. We already quoted Rabbi Shimon earlier that Kodshim Kalim don't have that requirement of Mirika and Shtifa. It's only true by Chatat and Kodshei Kodoshim. So Tarabanan, Asher Tivushal Bo, and Liela Shibishel Bo. So I only know about when you cooked in it. How do I know that Ira L'Tocho Roteach Minayin? I don't know if you pour boiling hot water into it. There's also a requirement of Mirika and Shtifa. So Malomar Asher Tivushal Bo Ishaver. So the focus here is on the word bo, as Rashi says over here, that the bo seems to indicate that no matter how it got there, Ishaver, it will be broken. So it's not only because of Bishol, but any way that something hot is inside of there, or there's bliut that's taking place, Ishaver, then it should be broken. The Kli has to be broken. Bai Rami Barchama. Tila'o ba'vir tanur mahu. If you take the Chatat and you're cooking it on a spit inside of an oven, what is the din over there? A bishul ubiluahu dekapit rachmana. Is the Torah require both bishul, the heating of the item, and bliah, meaning the absorption of the item, hu dekapit rachmana, udilma a bishul below biluah. Maybe the Torah cares just about cooking, even if there's no absorption. So now, in any type of cooking process, there are two parts of it. There's the cooking of the item, means that the hot item that's placed in this utensil. I mean, it's cooked in the utensil, or we poured the boiling hot water or hot item into the utensil. And then there's the bliut, the absorption into the klicheres or the klei nechoshet, that also takes place because of that heating element, the element of heat. So now the Gemara is trying to understand this gezeret hakatuv with regards to b'mikan shtifa, is it only associated when you have bishul and blia? Or is it in a case even when there's just bishul? Or maybe even when there's a case of just balua? So Rava tries to answer. It says, I'm a Rava tashma. Echad shebishul bo, b'echad sheira l'tocho roteach. Doesn't matter whether it's cooked in there, or whether it's poured as a boiling hot item into there, that also is considered to be problematic. So that's balua below bishul. So he says, listen, balua below bishul, lo kami bailan. Well, I don't have any question that when there's blia without bishul, that the Torah says you have to deal with it. And there's a problem. And that's why when you pour boiling hot water into it, or boiling hot whatever it is into the item, even though you didn't cook it in it, there's blia. And that blia is going to cause a necessity for merikan shtifa. Our question is, kikamar bailan bishul below bilua. When there's cooking without absorption, my, what's the din? So again here, when you're cooking in an oven with a spit, the item, the meat, is not touching the walls of the oven. Since it's not touching the walls of the oven, there's no bliut into the oven. Now, of course, when you're cooking something like that, there's gravy and other things that drip off of it, but they drip into the fire and into the coals, and they're burnt off before they create any absorption into the walls of the oven. So that's the question. Here you have bishul without bilua, what's the din? All right, so now Gemara says, tashma. The tanur and the mikdash was made out of metal. If you think that bishul without absorption, the Torah doesn't worry about, why don't they make the oven and the mikdash out of clay? Because the problem you would have if bishul was always problematic without bilua is the fact that bishul would then require the breaking of the kli cheres, and this again might be what precipitated the Rambam's view over here. The Gemara jumps from rikash shtifa to kli cheres and seems to think that they have the same din over here, and that breita seems to indicate that. So that might be the source for the Rambam's view that the Mishnah is also about kli cheres, not just about the kli nechoshet. Over here we're saying that the oven in the mikdash, it was made of kli cheres, and bishul was a problem, then you'd have to break the oven every time that you cooked the chatat inside the oven of the mikdash. The fact that they didn't make it out of kli cheres and made it out of metechet shows you that that was a problem. And if you had done bishul there, you would have to break it. So they made it out of metal, so you don't have to break it each time, but you can kosher it, and it won't be a problem. So that's the Gemara's point, that that must mean that bishul is problematic, independent of b'liut. Gemara says, no. Since you have the sharei menachot, which are eaten by the Kohanim, and the sharei mincha include oil and flour, so they have oil in there, and the flour, which then will be absorbed into the wall of the oven. So that's what causes the problem, or that's the issue. Tafiyatan b'tanur, that they're baked in the tanur, and therefore iko bishul ubilua, and therefore there's going to be both bishul and bilua there. Avdin and shamatechet, made out of metal, so that we can solve the problem or deal with the problem, rather than have it be a kli cheres and have to break it each time. So ha'u tanura, da'at chuba tichya, this tanur, this oven in which they basted fats inside the oven, Asur Rabba Bar Ahilai, Lemichla Lerifta Leolam. He says you can never eat any bread that is baked in this oven, Bafilu B'milcha, even with salt, Dilma Ati Lemichla B'kutcha, because we're afraid you might eat it with Kukuta Chabavli, which is a milchit item. Our problem is, according to Rabbi Bar Ilai, is that you have fleshik bread now. And it's asur to have fleshik breads because people might eat it with cream cheese. They might eat it with something that's milchik. So we don't want that to happen. So we don't allow you to ever eat the bread that is cooked, baked in this oven. The problem is that the oven had fats basted inside of it. The fats are fleshik. Now it makes the oven fleshik. Kli cheres absorbs. And in its absorption then, it remains permanently in there and it's polite every time. That means any bread that's baked by putting it on the walls of the tanur is going to absorb from that. It's going to make it fleshik. Now that it's fleshik, can't utilize it because it has the chance of causing huge problems when people don't realize that it's fleshik bread and they eat it with milchiks. Meitave, is that true? In lashina teisa b'chalav, the same problem in reverse. You're not allowed to bake bread using milk, make milchik bread. Vimlash kolapat kula asura mipnei hergel avira. And if you do it, the pot remains a sore because of the fact that it is milchik bread. Hergel avira is the risk that you're going to eat it with fleshiks. So bread must be pariv. It has to be pariv because people eat it with milchiks, they eat it with fleshiks. It is a staple product that's eaten with both items. And if you make it milchik or fleshik, there's no way to know that it's milchik or fleshik. There's no inherent siman in the bread to tell you that. And therefore there's a high risk of avera. And that's why we don't find any breads that are milchik. And if they are breads that are milchik, they have to have a sign to them or unique aspect to them, so that it makes it clear that these items are milchik. So one of those things is the Thomas's English muffins, which were for many years milchik. They had their own unique shape to them, an own unique format to them. So everybody knew that those were milchik because they were unique. They weren't in your typical format of a bread or a bagel, and therefore it wasn't problematic. But if it's in any typical format and it's not unique or easily discernible, you're not allowed to have milchik bread. Kiyotzibo. Similarly, ain't tashimet tanur ba'aliyah. You're not allowed to baste the oven with the fats of the tail, again, fleishiks. Yimtash kolapat kula asura ashiyasik tanur. There, the pot remains problematic until you refire up the whole tanur. So now both of these cases, with the milchik case, and now more clearly with the fleishik case, the braita says that the problem only exists for the bread itself. Meaning in the milchik case, it's only for the bread that you bake with the milk, and for the fleishiks, it's only in the oven that you baked in when the fats were basted in there. But if you refire the oven, you can kosher the oven, it's not a problem. On the other hand, the statement of Rabbi Bar Ilai was, this oven permanently is problematic for baking bread in it, because it will always make the bread fleishik. Why doesn't Rabbi Bar Ilai also have the solution here of koshering it? To yufta, the Rabbi Bar Ilai, to yufta, that's a strong refutation of the position of Rabbi Bar Ilai. Amarle Ravina the Ravashi, v'chima achar diyototah of Rabbi Bar Ilai. So now that we have a serious refutation of the position of Rabbi Bar Ilai, Amai Amai Rav. Why does Rav say that the Kederot Pesach of Chametz, Yishbiru, that when it comes to these pots of the Pesach, that they must be broken? Amarle, Rav Mukila Hai B'shel Matechet. Rav says that the case in Lashina Te'isa B'chalav, that Breita is a case where it's talking about a metal oven. And that's why you can kosher it. I'm speaking about kederot, which are made out of kli cheres. Those are clay utensils, and that's why they have to be broken. The truth is that that answer of Rav could also serve as an answer for Rabba Bar Ilai, although Rabba Bar Ilai didn't seem to make that distinction or makes any such distinction. He seemed to say, period, that this is the din. And so it would seem that Rabba Bar Ilai thinks that this problem exists even by an oven that is matechet, because otherwise they could have given the same answer they give for Rav, as the, to give her up a bori light. So Gemara says, "V'i baitema, v'tanur shel cheres zeh seko bifnim, v'zeh seko mibachutz." It depends on how you fire up the oven. So the difference is whether the fire is done inside or the fire is done outside. If the fire is inside and the heating up of the item is on the inside, then you don't have a problem because you can kosher it. Then if the heating is done from the outside, there's a problem because you can't kosher it. V'nevad hasaka bifnim. Why don't we then just heat it up on the inside to kosher it? Chayis alayu dimitabre. We're worried that there's going to be chas on it, that it's going to break. The difference being that if you heat something from the outside, then it gets very hot. Now you come to kosher it, you need to kosher the inside. When you come to kosher the inside, you got to put in hot coals and hot items in the inside to kosher that which is in the inside. The fear is that if you put those items inside, it's going to cause the kli to break, and it's going to get ruined. So a person will be chas. He will justify himself that he doesn't have to do this because it's going to ruin it, and he won't do it at all. Or you could explain that he won't do it sufficiently, which is that he won't do it at a hot enough state because he's afraid of it breaking. So in that case, there's no way to kosher the item. Then, if the heating is done mibifnim, it's done in the internal side, then you could kosher it, because the heating level was already reached inside, and when you go to kosher it, you just reach the same heating level, because the heating was done from the inside. You're not chas on the kli cheres, because that's the way it's utilized. And it's not a problem. So that'll be the distinction. Things that are heated from the outside cannot be koshered, and they'll have to be broken. Things that are heated from the inside can be koshered, and therefore they don't have to be broken. And that'll be the difference between the Braita and Rav's statement. So that's the alternative way to explain that difference. Hilkach, haikubya, heseko mibachutzu, v'asur. Therefore, it's true with regards to this kubya. Kubya is like the equivalent of a clay roof tile. So the clay roof tile was used in such a way where they would heat up the tile, and then after they heated up the tile in a fire, they would stick the item on it or inside of it. So again, that's the equivalent of heating from the outside. And for that reason, asur, if there's isur in it, or there's a problem of chametz, it can't be kashered, and therefore it is asur. So that'd be the conclusion from that distinction that Rav makes, because we're making a distinction between heated on the inside and heated on the outside. Now, the Tosfot over here discusses why is it that there's a problem with the bread that is fleishik, or the bread that is milchik, because why doesn't that become what's called notein tam bar notein tam? And he brings an example of a case where we say that it's mutar, which is dagim, shalu bikara. If you have fish that was cooked in a fleishik pot, mutar lo ochlam bekutach, you can't eat them with milchiks. So that's what we otherwise known as, what they today call as fleishik equipment, dairy equipment, which is that the item that is otherwise parif is cooked in that item, so it absorbs from that which it was cooked in, and then you're putting it together with another item. And that is notein tam bar notein tam. And we know that notein tam bar notein tam is mutar. Rashi suggests, with regards to notein tam bar notein tam, that that's only true imalu, if they went into a fleshik pot. That's when it's mutar, notein tam bar notein tam. Hanit bashlu, if it was actually cooked in that pot, then it would be asur, and the notein tam bar notein tam would not work. And then he quotes here, Rashi perish, Rabbi Yehuda, chotno. There was a case of halacha lemaisa where Rashi, there were eggs that were cooked in a milchik pot, and Rashi didn't allow them then to afterwards put those eggs on pieces of meat, even though it should have been notein tam bar notein tam, because Rashi believes that notein tam bar notein tam only applies to alu, when the item sat in that utensil, not when it was actually cooked in that utensil. So Tosfot, who disagrees with that view of the Rashi, and says that the notein tam bar notein tam even has application by bishul, he runs into a little problem over here as to why these breads are problematic. When you bake the bread in the oven, or that you bake the bread, and you bake the bread in the fleshik oven, and then you're going to eat it with milchiks, what's the problem? That is notein tam bar notein tam. The bread is absorbing from the fleshiks in the oven, and then you're eating it with kutach, which is milchik. So there you have a par of item that sits between the tinatam of the fleshiks into the bread, and that which is being connected to that which is milchik. So how come over here it's problematic if the Baal Tosfot would say that in general, if you cook the fish in the fleshik pot, then you can't eat it with milchiks according to the Baal Tosfot. So Tosfot over here brings a distinction, and he says, V'ein shayachan latir mikoach notein tam bar notein tam. Over here, you can't invoke that principle of notein tam by notein tam. Kimeich sheish shnei notein tam shel heter. That only works when both of the notein tam are of heter. Aval achad shel isur lo. But if one of them is of isur, it doesn't work. Dolo havi kamo kudeira shebishul ba basar. That's the equivalent of then cooking and taking a pot that you cooked meat in it. Lo yveshel ba chalav. You can't cook milk in it afterwards. So even though technically you would say that's a notein tam bar notein tam, that's not true, because you need shnei notein tam leheter. You need two notein tam that are both of heter. And so the problem over here, and the problem in that case over there, is one of the notein tam is a notein tam of isur. And since it's a notein tam of isur, that doesn't allow or doesn't create a situation of notein tam bar notein tam. Although the Rabbeinu Tam does answer that there is a heter of notein tam bar notein tam here, and the problem with tashim and putting the basting the oven with the fats is that there are cracks in the oven where the fat gets captured, and then there's actually mamashut, actual fat that's in there, and so unless you fire it up and kosher it, you can't get rid of those fats that are inside these cracks. That's what makes it a suinous case, even though it might have been a classic case of notein tam by notein tam. Tosfot also then brings a machloka between the two brothers, the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam, with regards to what's called Iroi Kli Rishon. When you pour boiling hot water out of a utensil that was on the fire, what is the status of that water that is poured out of the Kli Rishon? So the Rashbam believes that a Iri Kli Rishon has the same thing as a Kli Sheni, and just like a Kli Sheni is lo mivashel, it doesn't cook, so too Iri Kli Rishon is not mivashel. The Rabbeinu Tam, on the other hand, believes that Iri Kli Rishon is Kli Rishon. It's similar to a Kli Rishon, and the Rabbeinu Tam goes so far as to say that you can pour Iri Kli Rishon. It's the same as doing Hagalah. If you need to boil up a pot with hot water, then pouring the boiling hot water on the item is the equivalent of boiling it in the pot itself. And one of his proofs is our Gemara over here, where the Gemara says that Bishul, cooking in that utensil itself, and Roteach, which is the case of Iroi, pouring from another Kli that was cooked into that pot, have the same din with regards to Merikan Shtifa and Hagala over here. And so you see that Iroi Kli Rishon has the same din as a Kli Rishon itself. And based on that, Rabbeinu Tam, it says it has problems here, but that also means that in other areas it's going to provide us a benefit, which is that Iroi Kli Rishon can provide the equivalent effect of Hagala by pouring the Kli Rishon, because it's as if you boil the water inside of the pot itself. Now the Baal Tosfot say that that sheet of the Rabbeinu Tam would be acceptable to them if he believed that when you pour from an Iroi Kli Rishon, it affects everything that it touches, meaning that it's mivashel the entire item that it touches. But the Rabbeinu Tam is of the Shita, it's really a Shita Benunit, which is brought in the Tosafot, in the Gemara and Shabbat as well, which is that Iroi Kli Rishon is not like a Kli Rishon, Iroi Kli Rishon is not like a Kli Sheni, it's somewhere in between, which is that the pouring out of the Kli Rishon is mivashel, but it's only mivashel kidei klipa. It's mivashel, but only the outer edge or the crust of whatever item is being touched by the Iroi Kli Rishon, but it doesn't penetrate deep into it to do a full bishul. And that's the conclusion of the Baalei Tosafot, and the Rabbeinu, here it's in the name of the Rabbeinu Tam, and other places the Baalei Tosafot take that middle position, that Iroi Kli Rishon is sufficient only to kill kidei klipa, and that has major nafkamino to gabe Shabbat, the example that I always bring, is with regards to a baby's bottle. If you have a baby's bottle that has milk in it, and you want to heat up the milk for the baby, obviously you can't cook liquids on Shabbat, you can't heat them up. So what you can do is pour water from a Kli Rishon, or even from the urn, directly on the bottle, because that's called Iroi Kli Rishon. And Iroi Kli Rishon is only Mevashel Kedei Klipa, the outer edge, or the outer crust of it. And over here, the outer edge, or the outer crust, is the bottle itself. The only thing that's Mevushel is the bottle, which doesn't have a Din of Bishol. The milk on the inside doesn't have a Din of Bishol, and therefore you can heat up the milk in that way on Shabbat, based on this view that Iroi Kli Rishon is only Mevashel Kedei Klipa. But in that way, it also seems to weaken the idea of an Iroi Kli Rishon is Kikli Rishon. That's what the Baalei Tosafot are noting over here, that the Rabbeinu Tam thinks you can use Iroi Kli Rishon for kashering. Then how could you just say that it's Mevashel Kedei Klipa? It's Mevashel entirely, then you could argue that it can kasher just like Bishol itself. But if it's only being Mevashel Kedei Klipa, how can it function then to do Kibol O Kach Polto, when it's not reaching the same level of Bishul as when the item was actually, when this pot actually had Bishul done in it? So that's a question the Baalei Tosafot would leave. And therefore, the halacha, we hold that with regards to Dinei Shabbat, that Iroi Kli Rishon is only Mevashel Kedei Klipa. But with regards to kashering, we're generally makpid to do the Hagalah in the Bishul itself and not use Iroi Kli, except in situations where it's very difficult, like countertops and other areas like that, where their usage was probably in that same manner. And therefore, the pouring of the hot water, the Iroi, is a simulation of what happened in these situations. Okay, we're going to stop here at the bottom of Tzadi Hei Amud Bet.